Okay, good evening. This is the Chelan County Planning Commission meeting for January, 26, 2022. In response to the governor's proclamation 20-28, the Planning Commission will hold all of the regular and special meetings via Zoom video conference until further notice. We'll go ahead and start with roll call. Vicki Malloy here. Ryan Kelso. Okay. Will Wiggs. Okay.
I was muted.
Well, you've got to stop being so muted.
Okay.
Okay, Ryan, were you muted also?
I am unmuted. I'm here.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're here. Okay. Sherry Warren, welcome.
Here. Thank you. Sherry.
Thank you. Ed Martinez.
Here.
Okay. Joe Walensky.
Here.
Jesse Riddell.
I'm mute, Jesse.
Go ahead. What?
There we go. I'm here. Sorry. Okay. I was having a little bit of mouse problems.
Okay, Jesse, can you pronounce your last name, please?
Riddell.
Riddell. Okay, thank you. Welcome. David Donovic. If you're here, you're muted also.
I don't see him yet in the list.
Okay, and Doug England.
Here.
Okay. Well, seeing we have a quorum, a very good quorum, we'll go ahead and proceed to the next order of business, and that is to elect the 2022 Chair and Vice Chair of Chelan County Planning Commission. Are there any nominations for the chair position?
I'd like to nominate Doug England. He has to accept, though, right?
He does have to accept because I too would have liked to nominate him as chair. And my reasoning behind that, I wrote out something that was important to me. Keeping in mind the changes occurring within the community development and the newly appointed members to the Planning Commission, I believe it's important to have a strong leader with experience in presiding over commissions, a strong knowledge base of county code, County Comprehensive Plan, GMA, critical areas, and shoreline management plans in order to lead us through the possible conflicting opinions when transferring to a new community development director and possible staff changes. Accordingly, I too would like to nominate Doug England for the position of chair.
Vicki, I think that's a second.
Okay, I second it. Any other nominations? Am I supposed to ask that like three times? Any other nominations? Any other nominations? With no further nominations in mind, I think let's go ahead and take a vote, even though it's unanimous, I'm sure. All those in favor of Doug England as our new chair, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed to that? Okay, take it away, Doug England.
Thank you, Vicki. We'd like now to approve the minutes from November 17, 2021. I entertain a motion to that effect.
Point of order, Doug?
Yes.
Shouldn't we continue with A and elect the vice chair?
I'm sorry, you're correct. So I'd open the nominations for a vice chair.
I'd like to nominate Vicki Malloy, please, for the same reasons that she basically named Doug as well. Thank you.
I second it.
Been moved and seconded. Are there any further nominations? Hearing none. All those in favor of Vicki Malloy as vice chair, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Say nay. Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. So now we will go ahead and I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from November 17th, 2021.
I'll entertain that motion. Motion to approve the minutes from November.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, Jesse seconded it. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? They are approved. So is there any public comment period that's no items that are on the agenda? I'll ask one more time. Are there any anyone wishing to provide public comment for items not on the agenda?
I may, Mr. Chair, to remind our public participants that there's a raise hand button at the bottom of the screen if they'd like to speak.
Do you see anyone?
Yes, Carl has a raised hand.
Okay, Carl?
Yeah, I would just like to say a few words.
We can't hear you.
They can't
hear you. It's hard to hear you, Carl.
Working.
Okay, that I can hear you better there.
Okay, I would just like to say a few words at the end of the meeting. I'm in another Zoom meeting right now, if that would be okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and we will. There's no other public wishing to make a comment, and please let me know if anyone sees a hand. We'll come back to that at the end of the meeting. Is there any old business that we need to have discussed tonight? I have no indications of any old business. So new business, I would turn it over to staff then for the public hearing and open the public hearing PBRS 21-061 White. So Catherine, are you, who's going to present that?
I am.
Okay.
So this is Alex White, Planner 2 for Community Development here. This is PBRS 2021-062 is an application to requesting approval of an open space classification for 8.48 acres of land to the public benefit rating system. So a little bit of background on the PBRS. RCW was an RCW 84.34 was enacted by the Washington State Legislature in 1970 for the purpose of maintaining, preserving, conserving, and otherwise continuing in existence open space lands for the production of food and fiber and to assure the use and enjoyment of natural resources and scenic beauty for the economic well-being of the state and citizens. Chelan County Code Chapter 14-22 provides a rating system for the evaluation of such open lands. The public benefit rating is used to value property for tax assessment purposes. The amount of property tax reduction is based upon the number of eligibility points for which a property qualifies. So for this application, the applicant applied for two high priority resources, which are 5 points each. The first one was the farm and agricultural land, or farm and agricultural conservation land, which is defined as land as traditional farmland, grazing land, or rangeland that may have been classified under agricultural open space. The subject property is not currently zoned as agricultural lands. However, pursuant to the district use chart in the Wenatchee City Code, agricultural use is allowed on properties that are zoned rural or what's our house? The suburban residential in the Wenatchee UGA. Also, the property is classified as land use code 83 for the assessor's office, which is agriculture classified under current use pursuant to the revised code of Washington. This land is also designated as open space as well by the assessor's office. So due to the current tax classifications and ag that is allowed for use within a zoning district, I have said that the subject property meets the requirements of farm and agricultural conservation land classification. They have also applied for a high priority, or also as a high priority resource classification. They also have applied for the urban growth area open space, which is defined as one or more acres of land within the boundaries of an urban growth area. This land is only open to those paying a membership or initiation fee, shall be considered open to the public if it meets a couple qualifications. The finding was that the subject property is 8.48 acres in size and zoned as residential single family within the UGA. The applicants are not proposing any users to pay a membership or initiation fee. Therefore, the conditions do not apply. They did not apply for any medium priority resources, or they did not apply for any bonus categories as well. Staff has concluded that the following are consistent with the Chelan County Code: the farm and agricultural conservation land, which is 5 points, and then the urban growth open space area, which is 5 points as well. So in total, the applicant has requested 10 points, and staff finds that the application and properties are consistent with the criteria for 10 points for a reduction of 50% in the fair market value of 8.48 acres. Does anyone have any questions regarding
that? I have a few questions on this. I did some research on it. It is kind of like a very weird lot, right? You've got some very usable, I guess, sheds there. I'm not sure if they're horse sheds or if they're tool sheds. On the top right, you have what looks like a horse pen with horses grazing on the right-hand side. And then you have this kind of discontiguous property across the street and across the street. And also you have some fairly pricey homes, like $600,000, $700,000 homes in that area. This could vary. I mean, if we were to look at this again, when they wanted to convert over to urban, or if they wanted to basically convert these lots over to build a small neighborhood, it would be no problem for us. It would be consistent with how we behaved in the past, because it is completely surrounded by houses. I know that they're paying $1,000, I guess, in taxes right now. There is the neighbor right next to them is paying $6,000 in taxes. There is one small parcel up above that is like a quarter of the size, and they're paying $800 in taxes. There is one that's paying $6 in taxes, which is three lots over to the west, but it is completely enclosed and it's inaccessible by roads or some of the residents. I mean, this is prime real estate, and I just don't understand, how it is that this is going to basically accrue in value as a result of the infrastructure that would be put in with the neighbors' taxes, and they don't want to contribute to that. Plus, I'm wondering about those two sheds. It seems like this is a used lot that it's a minimal amount of taxes they're paying. And it's being used. I don't understand why they don't want to pay the taxes on this. That's my take on it.
I need to speak up. I'm going to recuse myself on this project, as I'm very good friends with the owners of the property. So, I could answer questions for them possibly, but They are also out of the country, and I actually called them this morning about this, but they weren't aware that this hearing was going to occur today. Mm-hmm. So they're not able to be here or on Zoom.
I'm guessing the value of this tax, if you used it for residential, it could go into the millions, if not $2 million. That's what I see the value. So I think they should be glad it's only getting taxed $1,000.
Well, and this is to like preserve it as ag land and not to be developed. So that's what part of the public benefit rating system is.
How many years is that term?
10, isn't it?
10 years.
The 10 years.
10.
Oh.
Well, and if it's converted before that 10, if it's converted before that 10 years, don't they have to pay that back? Or is it paid back on a prorated basis?
No, they have to pay it back. In fact, there's no limit anymore, to my understanding.
It's 7 years back, is what I understand in tax back.
7?
Okay. Yeah, 7 years tax back.
Hey, Ryan, do you want to comment a little bit more on that then? Do you know more about the property?
I can comment as public. The entire is that okay?
Yes, it is.
The entire property and surrounding properties have been farmlands and orchards of the applicant for as long as I'm aware of. And then probably around 20 years ago or so, they developed it, some of the adjacent lots, and had removed some of their orchard at that time. They continue to live on site of one of the adjacent properties, and it's currently it's horse pastures and orchard.
Okay. Are they expected back in the country?
They just left.
Okay, but they're preserving it as the number one deal is preserving as agricultural properties. And quite frankly, I don't know that that's a realistic statement in that it's surrounded by homes. And once I thought the orchard was pulled out entirely, and to plant an orchard now would be like a new planting and would not be subject to the rules that apply when people move in around an existing agricultural property. And so is it realistic to say that they're preserving his agricultural property?
Question.
Staff, do you have a comment on that?
I mean, can you clarify that, Vicki, what you meant by it? Can you say that?
What I mean by it is that, didn't it say that the orchard had been pulled?
Yes, the orchard has been pulled.
Okay, and that's how it was used previously. And so that orchard property would make it, you know, if it was viable to use as agricultural property in the future, that's why it would qualify for the 5 points. But I'm trying to say that with it being surrounded by homes, to put an orchard in after the fact would mean that they would not have the protections they would have had the orchard been there and then residents move in around it. Consequently, I don't see where it's realistic to think that it can be agricultural property in the future.
Well, they can use it as like rangeland or like grazing for farm animals too.
Okay.
It's consistent with the agricultural use.
And it's just right at the cusp of Wenatchee, right? So that's going to be kind of overtaken pretty soon. Will that particular status remain? Community development, could you answer that? Would that particular status of tax exemption remain after they basically get swallowed up by the city of Wenatchee?
You're asking would that designation be carried through under the city code?
Right.
Okay.
I don't have an answer to that question. I don't know.
I believe it would remain, but once it would be subdivided and therefore single family residence or any kind of structures would be built on it, it would be their responsibility to pay any compensated taxes for the properties. So once any kind of development started on the property, it would be the property owner's responsibility to pay the back taxes.
And they would pay that to the county even though at that time they were in the city?
Correct.
And how is that tracked? How is that tracked then? Because it wouldn't go through our community. It wouldn't go through our community development. It would go through an Wenatchee's system. So how would we know that it had been converted?
We'd have to work with the assessor's office, I believe.
Well, I personally take back the comment I made, because if it is used as and can be used as grazed land, then it is an agricultural property of types and that does qualify for the 5 points. And the way it's currently being used, I don't think we can think ahead and say, well, eventually it's going to be this, so we shouldn't give it to them. Instead, it's this now. And if it is developed, you know, in the future, they're going to have to pay it back anyway.
I know Forest Rest is at a limit of, for some outrageous reason, 15 acres, right? It's what you have to have, a minimum contiguous land. I mean, if you ever talk to anybody from Weyerhaeuser, they'll tell you that 15 acres, as far as being considered Forest Rest, is laughable. At the very minimum, they would only consider 1,500 acres. So this has always been an exception in our county that I've always kind of like said, wait, we're building infrastructure for you. Your land is becoming super valuable and you're not helping in that area. You're not helping with the snow plowing. You're not helping with the school taxes. You're not helping, but your land is accruing value.
To me, it matters. I would agree to a little bit, Ed, but I'm not sure that's the question here. I think what, if that's the understanding, then the open space ordinance would need to be amended. I think the question is here is, does it meet the requirement? I mean, I understand what you're saying, but there is this provision in the county code that allows them to do this. And I'm not sure I see anything here that would disallow that request, even though I understand completely your argument. And you know, it's, again, it's more a question of the code being changed, but I'm not sure I see anything here that doesn't meet code requirements.
Why wasn't it automatic, community development? Could you tell me why this wasn't automatic? Why is this on our plate right now? It seems like I always thought that we came for exceptions here or approvals to essentially the Growth Management Act. Why is this on our plate instead of just being automatic?
This is, so for public benefit rating system, PBRSs, the process it goes to the Planning Commission. You, as the commission, reviews it and either recommends approval or denies it. And then it goes to the Board of County Commissioners and they either approve it or deny it. And after it's either approved by the Board of County Commissioners, it goes and the taxation agreement with the either the specific 50% the recommended 50% for this one, I think it is a recommended 50% reduction of fair market value that gets in the taxation agreement, and that gets recorded with the auditor, and it gets the assessors get a copy of it, and they're the ones who change the taxes for the next year.
Let me ask you one more thing. I hate to, I mean, I am learning from this. I just want you to know that I am learning from this, and probably next time it'll just go automatic, according to Doug and Vicky, who I respect, and I know that they know the answers to this. But those buildings there are not agricultural. And so what I'm wondering is that's $50,000 from what I can tell in the assessor's in valuation. Did they include that because they needed to fill essentially their minimum acreage?
From what I can see, those are agricultural buildings. They're shop buildings. Mm-hmm. And what they house inside of them would be agricultural use substances. There's no houses there on the property. So those are outbuildings and would be considered agricultural if that's an agricultural property.
When the orchard was there, that's where the agricultural equipment was stored. I do not know what's stored there now that there's no orchard. Okay, are there anyone else have a question for staff before we open it to the public? And Ed, I would say that after covering a few of these open space things, we need to remember that in this case, we are lowering their taxes. It doesn't lower the tax for anyone else. Everyone else's taxes will increase a small portion. Yeah, to cover right. The amount of tax that we are forgiving. And I felt at the time, a number of them that we did, that the open space ordinance is a little loosey-goosey. There are a number of things that are open entirely to interpretation, the number of points that are given each time, and some that appear to give duplicate points for other, you know, more than one benefit to the public. But it was determined, and when it was determined when this was put in, that there was a public benefit to have open spaces around. And that's why it was done originally that way. I'm sorry, Ed, go ahead.
No, you were completing. I'm sorry. I apologize. The other thing is that it can be income generating and it doesn't matter. They can house and rent out those structures there for horses and whatnot, and they still will get the tax benefit from it. It is loosey-goosey.
And I think, though, if either one of the staff can answer, I'm not sure how many points did you give them for open to the public? I don't see it on here right now.
Five points.
It's not open to the public.
It is not. They are not seeking open.
Okay, so there were no points awarded for that.
Right.
No. Okay.
No public access. Yeah.
No public access.
I think. That's not what it said in the staff report. I thought there was a 5-point benefit for the. Public access and public use.
Well, it said A and B did not apply, and that's what it was talking about, is the public use on those two portions.
They still got 5 points for that whole segment.
Where am I?
If we go to page, I believe, page 11, there it does basically say no public access, 0 points. The only thing that they have is subtotal points from high and medium priority resources, 10. So that would be farming, agriculture, conservation, and urban growth area open space.
They do not apply, so they don't have any points.
Okay. So are there any more questions for staff?
The only doubt I have. Go ahead. Is around the structures on the property. From what I see in Chelan County Code, it's a bit vague as to whether those structures are allowed. There is a definition in 14.98.1350 that says open space passive means any area of land essentially unimproved and set aside. That's my only doubt.
And so your question is, does it qualify if a portion of the property has been improved?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. So either one of you want to answer that?
I'm unsure of how to answer this.
So if it directly pertains to the use of the property, if the structures directly pertain to the ag use of the property, it would be part of the open space use. So if the structures were housing tractors and additional orchard structures, then they would be used, they could be used in, grouped into the use, the actual open space.
Thank you.
But everything has been ripped out, right? Space.
I'm sorry, Ed.
But everything has been ripped out, as Vicky has pointed out. So is it being used currently as agriculture, if everything has been ripped out of the, all the orchards have been ripped out?
Well, agriculture does include like grazing land and, you know, pasture as well. That is an agricultural use per our code.
Okay.
Any more questions for staff? Do we have any public present that would like to comment on it? Okay, hearing none and seeing none. Go ahead. Who's this?
Ryan. I was just curious. Ryan, there's a Cheryl on there, and I was wondering if that was Cheryl White.
Yes, Greg and Cheryl just got on. We didn't know if you were still talking about our property or not.
You are. Sorry, we haven't heard in enough to know what to say. So sorry, we couldn't get on for a while.
Okay, so what we've done, we've discussed it for a little while. Staff has presented their report, which recommends approval. There were questions about the use of the buildings and the question of whether or not the buildings were considered as an improvement. Part of the statute says that it needs to be unimproved property. Staff feels that that means that there is, if it's used as agriculture, that is part of that use and does not apply. Can you tell us what those buildings are used for?
Well, those buildings were built back in 1990. So it was for my tractor equipment and all the orcharding chemicals and all that stuff. So that's what they've been used for.
Okay.
And currently?
Currently, I still have the same tractors I had when I farming the stuff, and that's where they are. I also have a construction company that I use stuff for.
Okay. So Cheryl and Greg, would you like to make any comments about it, or are you just listening?
Like I said, we didn't feel like we had been able to listen enough to know what to say. I mean, we are using that property, I'm hoping for grass hay. So.
Yeah, pasture is an agricultural use, as discussed.
Okay.
Okay, I will go ahead and close this hearing now. And what's your pleasure talking to the commission?
Well,
is there a motion to approve or deny?
Yeah. Well, this is Vicky. I move, as soon as I can find it again, I move that we approve Public Benefit Rating System PBRS 21-062 to be approved as open space classification for the 8.48 acres of land owned by Greg and Cheryl White.
So your motion is to forward a recommendation for approval.
Right.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Is there a second to Vicky's motion?
I'll second that.
Who is that?
David Donovick.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded, noting that Ryan has recused himself. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay, I hear one nay. So the motion has passed. If for the minutes, would you record, please, the nay? And let me see, who was that that said nay?
Ed Martinez.
Okay, Ed. Ed said, I'm just trying to get to the right picture here. So Ed recommended nay. Ryan recused himself. And if you'd let, please let the record show that. Okay, we are now, we'll move on then to the public, open a public hearing, ZTA 21-587, Appendix B, critical areas. So staff, would you go ahead, please, with your report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Catherine Lorbeer, Assistant Director. And you may recall last year, you did approve two major documents for the county, the Critical Areas Ordinance and the Shoreline Master Program, which we did a periodic review of. And it was always our intent all along that these two documents align with each other. And we want to incorporate references to that approved critical areas ordinance in the Shoreline Master Program, and that would be in Appendix B. So that is basically the amendment that is before you this evening. We initiated this because additional public noticing was requested by the Department of Ecology for this particular item. But again, all along we had intended for these two documents to be in alignment with each other. So this is really more of a practical or a procedural step that we'd like to take. And once the board receives your recommendation, they will also hold a public hearing, and then the item will go back to Ecology for their final approval. So staff is recommending approval of this text amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, there are any questions for Catherine? And as I understand it, this is simply to satisfy the Department of Ecology for public notice. This is a document that we have already approved.
Yes, in the SMP, we wanted to make the cross references to that document that you've already approved.
Okay, does anyone have questions? Go ahead.
Thank you. I have only one question, Catherine. Did you have a checklist to go through before submitting the proposal? And I'm wondering, will you have a checklist in the future so that it doesn't happen again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Martinez. So there is a checklist when we went through the periodic review process, and I guess the best way I can describe it is those two documents, the SMP and the CAO, were kind of tracking together and were getting reviewed by all of the agencies. So the county staff was under the impression that these were, that it was clear that we intended for these to remain in alignment with each other. And I think when we got down to the final point, it's clear to the public that the Appendix B would reference, you know, the critical areas ordinance. So, so the checklist was completed at the beginning and at the end of the process. I'm not sure whether this would have come out any other way, because it's kind of a broader checklist. But this was kind of just something where we were told that we really wanted to make sure the public understood. We're happy to go through whatever additional process to give the public more opportunity to comment. And that's why we're bringing this before you. And then it'll also go before the Board of County Commission. So
do you think that there's anything that is new in the index that is referencing a different document that they may come back and say, hey, we need this document as well?
I don't necessarily think it'll be referencing a different document. The ecology may have some refinements to the wording in the appendix.
Okay.
It's a little bit hard for me to predict, but they have already done technical review of the critical areas ordinance. And as you know, it went through extensive technical advisory committees and public involvement. So I think we're pretty good to go, but you know, there may be some refinements that they make, and we'll just have to wait and see.
That's great. Thank you, Catherine, for your answer. You're very thorough.
Catherine, I got a couple questions here. One's in the general information with the sequence of timing, where it says on here the public comment goes through tomorrow, instead of, which is tomorrow, not today, where we're discussing things. And then the other is on the 60-day state agency, they have through February 25th, so just about a month more. So why are we seeing this before public comments period is still open and that the agencies still have open period of time to get back any comments they may have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kelso. Well, as you may recall, oftentimes with our comprehensive plan amendments and zoning text amendments, the state always has a 60-day review period. So we initiate that as soon as possible, and we simply cannot have final approval before that 60-day concludes. So at any point during that time, we can still move forward and take action. We just, the Board of County Commission just can't make final approval until the 60 days expires. And at this point, so far, we've received absolutely no comments because, as you know, the agencies are pretty familiar with this because we've already recently done this process. And we don't anticipate receiving any comments, but it is typical that the 60-day period runs during the time that you're reviewing things. As far as the public comment period, because it's a shoreline master program, we wanted to go the extra mile of giving a complete 30 days. So technically, yes, the public can still submit comments up and through tomorrow. And the board will have the benefit of any other comments that trickle in, should they. But at this point, I've received absolutely no public comments. So, you know, it's just oftentimes we have overlapping. And in this instance, we happen to have a day
different. So I've kind of done a little research too. And I've kind of called some of these different people that deal with these things. And sorry, my phone's ringing in the background. The elements they're talking to me is that of those that I've talked with, they weren't aware of this text amendment occurring. And as I'm being told that it'll actually have impact, one of them was saying that that they didn't feel that it was a procedural amendment as stated in the staff report. They believe that it will increase the buffers on small tributaries from 50 or 100 feet to 150 feet. And for low intensity uses such as single family, it'll increase things to 200 feet for high intensities and all other uses. Are you aware of that having any other impact?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Kelso, the critical areas, the provisions of the critical areas ordinance will be the same that we already have adopted. So if they have particular concerns, I would certainly encourage them to submit their comments so that they can be reviewed during this process.
Well, I guess in part of this is some of these people I talked to are actually people on the list down below on that helped with the original document. And mm-hmm. Vicki's name's on there as one of them, so she may have some knowledge or input of maybe what she was aware of with this.
And if I may, commissioners, I guess the best way for me to describe this is that we're not proposing any revising of any of the content of those documents that as they relate to the critical areas. We're revising the appendix in the SMP so that it just clearly cross-references those other documents and clean out the other information, because we would have different way. We would be using old stuff when we've adopted new stuff if it stays in place as is. And again, I would encourage anybody who has concerns about how those might play out to submit their comments during this process so that they can be considered.
This is Vicki. I do understand that this is simply transferring the critical areas ordinance information that we approved previously and that the technical advisory committee had put together. And so as to make it so the shoreline management plan, the critical areas portion of it matches the critical areas ordinance, which only makes sense. The only thing is that how was the public notified that we were doing this for their public comment period?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Molloy. So the process for public noticing is when this was first initiated, we did do an advertisement in the newspaper. That's how we handle code amendments and comprehensive plan amendments. As you may recall, we did an extended time period. Instead of the 14 days, we did a 30-day time period. And then so it is advertised in the paper. And then your agenda naturally is a public document that we've posted the plan on our public noticing site so that the public can also access it, just like you did ahead of the meeting.
Right, okay, well.
So they'll still be able to be involved in the public process if they want to participate in this meeting or in the future Board of County Commission, which will also be a public hearing.
Good, that's great. What I'd like to see, you know, like on the website, because I was just looking through the website, trying to figure out, you know, where it might have been listed. You did say through our commission meeting agenda. Is there any way that we can have a category on the webpage stating public comment items? And then list those items so that the public there's something there that says, hey, I need to look at this. Is that reasonable?
Mr. Chair and commissioners, you have a public notice set portal on our website for every project that is going through public noticing. And then they can see all the documents, all the application materials of our active projects.
Okay, I just clicked on it and you're right on, okay.
And so, and we also put that information in the advertisement that we post in the newspaper so folks can visit that portal.
Okay, nobody takes the paper anymore, but that's fine. I'm joking.
Mr. Chair, this is Sheree Warren. I have a question for staff. I was wondering about the wording of the SMP, it happens to be on page 12. It says that this SMP includes critical area regulations applicable only in the shoreline district and shall control within shoreline jurisdiction over other county critical area regulations. My question is, now that we are referencing the Chelan County Code rather than including the code, the regulation within the document, should we make a word change in section one of the SMP to say reference rather than include?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Warren, one thing I would like to point out is that that this alignment is kind of a point in time. So it's possible that there are things in the SMP over time that might regulate slightly differently and that they are really two separate documents. It's just at this point in time, because we have a newly updated critical areas ordinance, that we have this opportunity to align them. But in the future, when we update the critical areas ordinance, it doesn't automatically update the SMP. We always have to be making sure that maybe there's a nuance, maybe there's something that needs to be slightly different within the shoreline, that we still keep them as distinct documents.
Thank you.
I agree on the cleaning up and stuff. It makes things a lot easier. However, I think some of what's happening here, though, it changes things of how things will be applied going forward. It's like the buffer of a type F stream would be about 150 feet where it flows into the Columbia River, and in the urban shoreline environment that has only a 50-foot buffer. So the Little Creek has a bigger buffer than the Columbia River. So some of the buffers in the adaptation, I agree on cleaning things up so that one relates to the other in some fashion, but not in a manner that penalizes or makes things more regulatory for people.
So I'm not sure I understand why there is a difference, why it changes things if all we're doing is referencing. I mean, if the rules are there, are the rules there or are they not?
There's rules that are in this document that are being completely struck out and just referencing other documents. Where this one, in my understanding, precedes the other.
I thought it was very clear when we were voting on this that one would have to be consistent with the other. I mean, that's what we voted on.
That's what I thought we were doing, is voting to put them together so they were consistent.
Yeah.
And Ryan saying that they are no longer consistent, if that's the case.
Well, it would be making them consistent in that you're getting rid of some tools and things that are in one document that are no longer in the other document.
And Commissioner, certainly, if I may, certainly our intent is to make anything more restrictive. It was just to try to provide consistency and alignment. So, you know, and those are something that you could consider as part of your recommendation, is that, you know, as long as it doesn't become more prohibitive than the existing condition or something along those lines, you know, without the specifics. I'm not, you know, I'm just not sure what the specific issues are. So, but it is very important feedback.
I'm afraid I'm a little concerned that usually you don't find those differences until someone comes in for an application, and then there are two conflicting rules, and I thought that's what we were trying to get away from.
So we would like to clarify one thing here, though. is, so if you have a stream that's flowing into the Columbia River, if it's within 200 feet, that's all within shoreline jurisdiction, and therefore SMP requirements fall in that 200-foot buffer. But once you exceed that, once you go past the 200-foot shoreline buffer, then the existing critical area ordinance applies to that creek. So then the, you know, so the buffer for that creek would, if it's within the shoreline jurisdiction, then all regulations to the shorelines apply. Whereas if it's outside of the S&P, then the critical areas would take precedence.
Does that make sense, Ryan?
Parts of it do. Some of it just in, I just know.
I know what you're saying, Ryan. This is Vicki. I wish I had gone back and taken a look at what we had put together for the critical areas, you know, the language that was used, and because I know that was all approved, and it and Catherine, is it okay? All shorelines, are they considered critical areas?
Well, and no, and the shoreline, all shorelines, which is 200 feet adjacent to river and lakes over 20 acres, anything, the SMP applies to those. Whereas if it's just critical areas, which are like streams that are not within the shoreline jurisdiction, then critical area ordinance applies.
Well, now I'm really confused, because we're changing the SMP to match the CR, you know, the critical areas ordinance language. And if they're two separate things, and critical areas doesn't start until after the SMP, why are we changing the SMP? I just got really confused.
So what's your pleasure? No comments on that?
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, again, you know, it's an effort to bring these into alignment. The current SMP references critical areas, and they are the older standards from what we have adopted to date. It's an appendix so that all this information is in one place for the customer to have within one document. So I don't know if I have any more information I can offer on that. If there are specific things you want us to bring back, we can certainly do that. Or if you want to move forward with some sort of recommendation with additional guidance, you have that option. So it's really up to you how you would like to proceed.
Is it possible to get feedback from some of these others? Like there was Bill Sullivan's name was on there,
This is a public hearing item, so
at some point
I would encourage you to take testimony.
Like some of these others that have very good knowledge in these areas and how they apply, because they use them daily. I would prefer to see that, make sure that they understand, and as they're the ones that deal directly with it on a daily basis.
So any other questions for staff?
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and commissioners, you know, oftentimes when you think about a project, it's a parcel of land may have multiple things going on where portions of it are within shoreline jurisdiction. Portions of it might have critical areas on it. So again, the SMP was just trying to be a document that was comprehensive for the user, and it has an appendix as a reference. So I don't know if that's helpful to think about it that way, but a project is reviewed from a lot of aspects, and the shoreline jurisdiction is only one portion of that.
Okay, are there any questions for staff or comments from commission? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and open it to the public. Do we have anyone here? Is anyone on the call that is wants to make a comment? I don't see any hands. Does anyone else?
We do have one hand.
Okay, Karen.
Hello, my name is Karen Merritt. I own a house on 16518 South Lakeshore Road. And just listen, this is my first planning commission. I want to be involved with seeing what the decisions that you guys are making and referring to the Board of Commissioners and how that is changing or affecting, whether positively or negatively, the residents of Chelan County. And under this, what you're discussing right now, it doesn't sound like there's a very clear understanding, and I would recommend, you know, reviewing this a little bit further. This has implications. Like, if something gets approved without seeing that it is going to affect somebody's development close to a stream or a river, like, that's somebody's finances and resources that they've put in to buy a house. And if we are, as a community, saying, no, you then can't do this, like, we should not make decisions hastily. And it sounds like there's some disagreement or misunderstanding. So I would encourage more time reviewing it before you change code or add an appendix. Thank you.
So anyway, other public would like to make a comment. Okay, I don't see anything else, so I will close this hearing. And what would you like to do?
I would like to make a motion that we approve this as staff recommended. We have already gone through the SMP ad nauseum. Last year, we also understood specifically that they had to be in coordination with each other, and there is still comment period that people can come in. There was nothing specific said tonight that they are in any way in conflict. It was all about this person basically has concerns. That person, if they have concerns, they know now that they can come forward. But this was understood last year when we voted on this. We basically went through this. Vicky had gone through a lot of effort in basically putting this forward to us to approve. And I see no reason why it cannot continue forward as we had planned. It was just a missing appendix from the submission.
Bye. Yeah, my only comment would be that the public hearing or the public comment period isn't closed. And I'd like to hear, before approving anything, I'm always cautious with the Department of Ecology. I'd like to see their comments also.
Doesn't it go through us and then it goes to the commissioners? Isn't there that time?
But we're making a recommendation.
Making a recommendation without hearing, without closing the public comment period. And we're making a recommendation without hearing the final word from the Department of Ecology.
We don't have to make the recommendation now, but I'm saying that that's the process.
And commissioners, if I may, the public is always invited to continue, even once the public comment period is over, they will still be able to participate and provide public comment in any future public hearings. So the comment period is just simply a, we're making sure we're giving at least a full 30 days, but they can continue to offer comments even after that point.
What if those comments are elements that I think we should be aware of before we give knowledge of a recommendation, that we should have all things in front of us?
Just point of order, Chair, we do have a motion on the floor. You're on mute, Doug.
There's a motion on the floor for approval. Is there a second? Is there a second?
This is Cherie Warren. I second.
Okay, there is a motion to approve and a second. We're now open for discussion. We've kind of already had some discussion about it. I think the basic concern is that we're making a decision before the closed comment period, which I think in the future probably should be addressed. I think the public comment period should always be closed before we make our approval. So is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion? I don't see a hand. I don't hear anyone.
Ask a procedural question. If we're uncomfortable with the comment period not being closed, are we able to table this for a vote until it's closed so that we can close that loop? Or is that not an option?
No, it can be tabled.
But that would have to be a separate motion.
Yes. So this motion would have to be voted on first.
Thank you for clarifying, Chair.
The motion would have to fail, and then a motion to table or a motion to deny. So hearing no further discussion, all in favor, say aye.
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 So I hear two. All those opposed, please say nay.
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 Okay, I only hear two. Are there more nays?
Yes.
Nay.
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 That's four nays at least.
Five.
Five? Okay. The motion has failed. I would entertain a motion for either denial or a motion to table.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, you could consider a motion to continue the item to your February meeting also.
There you go.
I'd make a motion to continue to the February meeting.
Do we need to close the public comment period first?
That will be closed by then, I think, right?
That will be closed by then.
Okay.
We just want
Mr. Chairman and commissioners, you will still the public will still be able to comment and participate in your meeting in February also.
Okay, good.
Again, the 30-day period is simply an SMP period that we, you know, assure that we give the 30 days.
Why second the motion to
Doug, table? You're on mute.
Is there something that automatically moots? Because I didn't do that. So I would entertain either a motion then to continue until the February meeting or to deny.
And Doug, I made a motion to continue to the February meeting.
And who is that? Is that Joel?
Yeah, that's Joel. Yep.
Okay. Is there a second?
This is Vicki. I second.
It's been moved and seconded to continue this discussion, this hearing until the February meeting. Is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed, nay. Okay, so this is, then we'll continue, please, Catherine, until the February meeting.
Point of question, Doug.
Yeah.
Yes. How will the commissioners be signaled that basically we have tabled this essentially until February?
Catherine?
And commissioners, are you referring to the board?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have not scheduled your agenda or your staff report notes that we have a tentatively targeted March for their public hearing, but we haven't scheduled it yet. So it just may push it back a couple weeks.
I see.
Okay.
Because I know in our bylaws, it specifically states that if a motion if there is no motion, of course, it just goes as failed to the commissioners, but I didn't know what happens if we basically table a particular item. Does it still go to the commissioners for approval, or does it just basically remain in stasis until that later date?
Well, they'll probably have the decision to make whether they do what we decided tonight to do, to go ahead and decision before the final, all the steps are done.
Okay.
So they'll wait for our recommendation. So what do we need in order to be able to make a solid decision on this? What further information do we ask for?
I'd like to just ask.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to see that those that use those portions of the code have the opportunity just in my few discussions with a few people, they weren't aware that this was occurring. So just those that use it regularly, that know the ins and outs of it, have the opportunity to bring forth whatever they might.
And Mr. Chairman and commissioners, any public comments that we do receive, we'll assemble those in a packet for you for your next meeting.
Okay. Thank you,
Catherine. Thank you.
And can we have a copy of the shoreline management plan posted, the entirety of it?
I think it already is, isn't it?
It's on the website.
Oh, it's on the website. Okay, good. Sorry about that. Because I was under the assumption this is just a portion of the shoreline management plan as relates to critical areas. And that, of course, that would have to match. But if it impacts other areas, that we would probably want to take a look at that, correct? Okay.
So I see next on our agenda, the schedule for next year's meetings. Does anyone have any comments on that? That's clear toward the end of the packet.
So I have a question. Are we planning on meeting in person, or do we have a tentative? Are we going to always meet via Zoom for the next year? And I understand that's a hard question to answer, but
I think it depends on the governor's decree, from what I see.
Yeah,
I was told the reason why continuing to do this by Zoom is that if we attended in person, first off, they'd have to upgrade things so that we could utilize a system in the commissioner's area. And secondly, that when we're making motions and such or comments, it's really going to be hard for anybody to know who's talking because they can't see our mouths move. And whereas on the screen here, they can see who's talking.
That's interesting.
Okay,
back to the schedule. You see any problems that jump out at you? for the dates that they've suggested, realizing we can move them if you find something as we get closer. Any comments?
December meeting, the 21st. Is that a problem for anybody?
It could be. Is there any way we can schedule it a week ahead of time so it's not so close to Christmas?
Christmas is on a Sunday, that, so that's on a Wednesday. Christmas is the following Sunday there.
Mm-hmm. It's right on winter solstice. We usually like to have a little bonfire out front. But...
Well, at least you can have it early. It gets dark early.
Catherine, I'm
in the longest day, the longest night.
Catherine, do we have to formally approve this, or if there are no objections, it automatically becomes what we're aiming for?
Mr. Chairman and commissioners, we're simply looking for your concurrence because we do, you know, map out the calendar and plan when the staff reports are going to be due, when notices have to go out. So we're just trying to get feedback. And I think for December, we had moved it up. If we had done the fourth Wednesday of the month, it would have fallen, I think, the following week. So, and you just have to imagine in November, how much time you're kind of leaving between meetings, but we can certainly go with this calendar and get closer to the chair's point. We can adapt as we move forward.
It does look like the November one was moved up earlier as well, because it's on the 16th. So if you went to December, it would be the 14th, which would still be about a month apart.
A month.
Right.
I'd like to see that happen.
Okay. You've heard anyone violently disagree with Vicki, or are we going to let her move our meeting?
No.
I know. So is...
So that'd be the third Wednesday of the month in December.
Correct.
Okay, Catherine, it sounds like most people would like to move it up a week.
Absolutely. We're happy to do so.
Well, that way, Catherine, you get a Christmas break yourself.
Oh, woohoo! And I get to have my bonfire.
So I see on the agenda, I don't know anything about it. It says downloading packets from website. What does that mean?
Mr. Chair and commissioners, we just wanted to touch base with you that we do post the packet on our website, and that what we typically do is send you an email that it is ready, that the packet's out there, that you can go ahead and download it. And we want you to be aware that the public's also can see it then once it's out on the website. And it's really just to check in with you. Are there any difficulties downloading? Have there been any concerns going forward? We're trying to make sure that our process is clean, clear, and concise, and that you all have access at the same time. We're letting you know via one means of communication that the packet's out there. Kind of just a check-in that everything worked okay. And certainly at any time it's not working, please reach out to us so that we can get you connected with the materials. Because we really do try to get them out there well in advance so that you have ample time to read your packets before the meeting.
So Catherine, even though it's on the website, you're still going to send us via email the PDF? No?
Not anymore.
No, our path going forward is we would like you to use the website because then we're keeping it all straightforward. Everyone's accessing the same information. Sometimes the packet is quite large.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to email. So we would like to just have one straightforward way to do it. And that's why we want to check in with you that this is going to work okay for you.
I like the PDFs.
Yeah, I would like to see though that you send an email out saying it is available, and then the rest of it's up to us.
Okay, any other comments
on that issue?
Yes, on any issues.
Yes. There's a couple of things I just want to, this is your time, Doug, but I just wanted to take this time. We have some staffing change and a couple commissioner changes that have taken place. And usually what we've done in the past, when someone has fulfilled their term of office, we acknowledge them. And in fact, the commissioners have been known to come to our meeting and say, hey, we just want to thank you for your work and blah, 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 blah. And so personally, I would like to acknowledge three people. And I think Carl Blum is on the line and would like to make a comment too. I want to say how much we appreciated Jim Brown and all the work that you guys have done as a crew, as your agency, that he has taken things from being totally misrepresented, having their own interpretations of whatever the code says and having wrong interpretations, and he's taken staffing that was dysfunctional, and he's put all of this together to create a functioning community development department. And he did so traveling all the way from Okanagan each day to do this, which was fabulous. The other thing I want to say is that he helped us through some very difficult decision making, and one of which is the short-term rentals. He was at the tail end of the marijuana issue. And on the short-term rentals, I'm so glad to see that we have actually got code now that gives people directions, so there's no guessing. And all of this is due to his hard work and his ability to be directed, or to direct and to guide his department to make these changes. So thank you, Jim Brown. Any other comments?
Thank you very much, Vicki. That was wonderful. As I said earlier, he was I came on board and he basically walked me through everything. He was very patient with me. You guys only saw the half of my comments or questions that I had during the live meetings, because I would ask him to clarify particular things that I needed to make a decision on. And he was always very patient with me. And I also think that his connection with the sheriff's department allowed us to expedite essentially having three task force officers for the short-term rentals. And I think that's what both sides wanted, actually. Both the STRAC and the SDR folks, they both wanted to make sure that we had enforcement in place. And that happened because of Jim in an expedited fashion. We had the enforcement officers before we actually had the whole thing approved, which was fantastic.
Yes. Okay, and the second person I'd like to acknowledge is Jim Newberry. Jim Newberry was with the Planning Commission for 12 years, and he was just recently replaced by Cherie, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and thank you for being here. Jim told me that his greatest accomplishment, or what he liked most about being on the commission, is working with the people that were on the commission, because we all have so much work to do and it's all done on a voluntary basis. And he just wanted to make sure that that was acknowledged, that the work we do is important work. And he appreciated that his fellow commission members did the hard work also. And so thank you, Jim Newberry, wherever you are. And then the final thing I wanted to say was with regard to Carl. And I know that David, you acknowledged in a letter to me today that it's somewhat contentious over how this all happened. But what I do want to do is concentrate on the positive. And that is that I believe that Carl was probably one of the best chairs we have ever had on our commission, at least since I've been on. I appreciated all the extra work that he did behind the scenes, staying up with the research on RCW's wax and other staying in contact with other municipalities. He talked to constituents, and he attended and was on Zoom for the commission meetings, and keeping in mind what it is that we had put through and wondering how they put it through, and then would report to us. So Carl turned out to be a very good friend through it all, and I think we owe him a great deal of appreciation for going far beyond what he needed to do. Carl, do you have anything you want to say? You're on mute if you do.
Yeah, there we go. I think I got it. Yeah, I do. I'm very appreciative of all the support and the help. I just want to take a few minutes of your valuable time to thank all of you I worked with on the commission. Your involvement and your support of our efforts is greatly appreciated. In going forward, I caution you to be aware of all the forces involved with land use in our county. I urge you to read Mr. Jim Brown's letter of resignation, where he clearly states some of the problems that we're going to face, if you haven't read it yet. Be very cautious of special interest groups. They certainly have a right to voice their opinion, but because of their single focus, they will block out other points of view. But mostly, I just want to thank everyone there that I work with and some of those that aren't there, but who really helped me a lot. Aaron Young, Greg Becker, Pat Hammersmith, and Jordan McDivitt. Best of luck to every one of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, Carl. We're at the end of our agenda items. Are there any comments anyone else would like to make before we close?
Well, I would just say welcome aboard the new members. I think we've got two or three.
Three
on. So welcome aboard. Yeah.
You're going to have to serve us tea the next time we meet.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and staff has to remember back more than 2 years ago, you used to bring cookies to the meeting too.
I'll definitely bring you cookies if we meet in person.
Oh, you know we're not gonna, right?
Okay, well, thank you very much, and this meeting then is adjourned.
Great job.
Thanks, Doug. Congratulations, Doug.
Good job, Doug.